Today we continue our conspiracy classics book club deep dive into James Shelby Downer's King Kill 33. We're going to talk about chapters 4 through 6. We'll talk about Kennedy, Beale and Bouvier, the Scarlet Woman, Miss Chudley. We'll talk about Marilyn Monroe's Shriner husband, Bob Slatzer, as we unpack divine and sacred names that connect JFK into Moloch or Baal, Jackie Onassis' Bouvier bloodline and the Radzivill Royals, mystical toponymy with a 32nd degree of latitude connecting through Tres Hermanas, Macbeth, the Great Whore, the Lone Pentagram State, looking at the symbolism of the color red, the history of Houston, Shakespeare's Macbeth, Texas' Masonic Control System, Kabbalah principles, psychosexual rituals, and the alchemical detonation of primordial matter. Here, I want to call it symbolism in pop culture. Now we're continuing our journey. This is the bonus episode. Bonus episodes for the supporter feed. So if you're not on the supporter feed, I don't know what you're doing. Get on there. Get on the winning team. All right. Now, presumably you've already listened to part one, so we don't need to go through there. But you're going to notice that we take an iterative view through this book because he brings up things at the beginning of the book. Then he elaborates on them a little bit further later. And you're going to get some more of that today. All right. And then in part three, the final part, we're gonna ramp up the book, of course. And then I'm going to zoom all the way back out, and I'm going to explain to you everything that we talked about. Because it might get confusing at times. You know, he's a genius. And sometimes these geniuses are strange characters. So, let's get into set four, chapter four, Kennedy, Beale, and Bouvier. And we're talking about Miss Chudley again. Back to Miss Chudley. He says that she found protection from the Pope's edicts with Prince Radzivill. Now, what in the world is he talking about? He's talking about, remember the mystical taint? Remember he talked about that in part one? We talked about basically it being a curse on the bloodline. And his implication here is that her participation in these sex ritual perversions cursed her bloodline. All right. Now, I don't have all the answers here. I have a lot of questions like, who the hell was Miss Chudley? Who's she related to? How do you know about these rituals? I mean, these are questions I'm not going to get the answers for. Then, and again, in the PDF I have, the pages are all chopped up. Then he starts talking about Marilyn Monroe, which obviously ties into JFK because JFK and his brother were supposedly stuffing Marilyn. He claims she was married to a Shriner Mason named Bob Slatzer. All right, which you can look that up online. This is a guy who claimed he was married, and the mainstream sort of view is that he was making it all up. And because I looked all this up. He doesn't explain all this in the book. Some of this is my research. She was apparently married three times. James Dougherty, Joe DiMaggio, and Arthur Miller. And none of them were Shriners or Freemasons. But Downard says that Bob Slatzer was indeed married to her. And he is the Shriner Mason. And he had written a book called The Life and Curious Death of Marilyn Monroe, and he claimed that he married her briefly in Mexico in 1952. But then it was later dissolved by Daryl Zanuck, the head of 20th Century Fox Studios, because, you know, back then the actors and actresses were owned by the studios, and they were like, that's a bad look. And this was between marriages, right? This is 1952, which is between James Dougherty and Joe DiMaggio. Now, I can't confirm that he's a Shriner, but it is interesting if he was, because I started doing a deep dive into Gravity Falls. Oh my gosh, I still got like 15 more episodes to watch. But I got a lot. I found an Epstein connection. There's that. But as you know, one of the main characters there is a Shriner. And in fact, all Shriners are Freemasons, but not all Freemasons are Shriners. Okay. Shriners are the ancient Arabic order of the nobles of the Mystic Shrine. And those letters, A-A-O-N-M-S, are actually an anagram for a Mason, if you rearrange them. And they incorporate a lot of the, you know, you always see them in the little cars at the parades, with the little red hats, the fez. They incorporate a lot of the Arabic or Middle Eastern architecture and symbolism in their group, because they are connected to the secret societies through the Assassins and the Knights Templar. That's where a lot of this stuff comes through. So interesting that Downard would bring that up when there's all these, you know, various conspiracies tied into that. But like I said, a lot of this stuff, he just kind of mentions it, and then later he'll go back to it sometimes. It's hard to follow. But he was onto something, because this was a long time ago, and clearly the DNA of Downard is on all of the conspiracy theories that we've been talking about. Then he talks about the science of names. Again, with the science of names, and the because God had created the world through the spoken word. There's a lot of power in words and names and in magic. That's why they have magical names, because they don't want their ops to know their real name, because then it provides a vehicle for them to put spells and curses on them. So he starts unpacking the name Beale, B-E-A-L-E, because Jackie Onassis's aunt is named Edith Bouvier Beale. She was destitute. Then JFK was born in Brookline, Massachusetts on Beale Street. And then if you unpack the word Beale, it connects you through to L, Bell, Ball, Beall, Beale, and Beale. L meaning God and like Elohim. Ball meaning Moloch, right? The deity of child sacrifice. El is the name of God and is a root of divine names. They call this a sacred name in Freemasonry. Beale is a location also, and is found 1 mile from Lindisfarne, which means holy house. And that connects Lindisfarne into the association with the Hera-Dum, which also connects into King Arthur, the Round Table, Merlin, Camelot, and the Scottish Black Watch, which we'll come back to all of that in part 3. Ugh. So he plays, it's kind of like when you hear conspiracy theorists that get into gematria, they just kind of get into this rap. He's kind of doing that, kind of just connecting a bunch of points together. So he continues looking at the history of the Bouvier bloodline and references Look magazine that traces the... Now, wait a minute. I got to look on my notes here. I can't tell if these are my notes or from his book. Oh, it's such a mess. Regardless, either him or I came up with the idea that Look magazine traced Bouvier's bloodline back to France in 1410. And Eustache Bouvier, who was Jackie Onassis's great-great-grandfather, fought in a French regiment under George Washington. So there's some royalty in that bloodline, in the old Bouvier bloodline. And then there's this view of JFK's bloodline having a curse. He went to Paris to meet with Charles de Gaulle, and at the same time, Marcel Bouvier was painting a bridge called the Spirit Bridge, a.k.a. the Bridge of Souls, a.k.a. the Log of Lerma. And when Marcel and Danielle Bouvier were driving up to Paris to meet JFK, because like I said, he was in Paris, they got into an accident and Danielle died. Now, tragically, she had a gift for Jackie Onassis, that's her first cousin, who they were going to see, and it said, "For my dear cousin," and it had a nightingale broken in its gilded cage. Now, where have we heard these things before? Twin Peaks and Eyes Wide Shut. Right? Twin Peaks, they were talking about logs, the log lady, Log of Lerma. The nightingale that sings at night. Cousins. She looks like me, but she is my cousin. And in Eyes Wide Shut, we had Nick Nightingale, a name that Kubrick changed from the book Dream Novella. It was Nick Nothingale, and Kubrick changed it to Nick Nightingale, a bird that sings at night. He's performing at night for these sex magic ritual parties, which is kind of like what they were doing at the Dashwood Caves that we talked about in part one. I'm going to read you from... Is this from King Kill 33? Must be, yes. News reports failed to mention the type of tree involved in the crash, which took away Danielle and ruined her nightingale. Whether or not it was a thorn tree of the rowan type, legend has it that a nightingale sings with its breast pressed against a thorn. Another story with a nightingale theme is the tale of Tereus, king of Thrace, who wanted to make love to Philomela, the sister of his wife, Procne. Philomela was eventually forced to submit to Tereus, who removed her tongue so that she could not relate what happened. By weaving a cloak in what she described the horrors to which she had been subjected and by having it delivered to Procne, great tragedy and hysteria ensued. Procne seized her son Aetes by Tereus and, after cooking him, served the meat to her husband. Tereus discovered the deception and murder and pursued the women, one of whom was transformed into a swallow and the other into a nightingale. Tereus was changed into a hoopoe. The god Zeus effected the transformation. The myth is allegedly an explanation for the melancholia of the song of the nightingale. So there's a little bit of cannibalism into that mythology as well, which ties into a lot of, you know, other conspiracies. Not a big relevant part of King Kill 33, so we're not going to focus too hard on that. But what Downard is trying to do is connect the world of mythology and the pagans into this reason for why there was a ritual to assassinate JFK. It's kind of the most complex conspiracy theory ever. So if you go by what's the axiom about the simplest explanation is the right one. Like, this ain't it. This ain't it, Chief. Okay, so Jackie Onassis actually once went to Delos Island, which is the birthplace of Apollo and Diana. Recall earlier Downer talked about the three goddesses, and one of them was Diana. Delos, a.k.a. Island of the Dead, is where she toured a bunch of Greek pagan sites. Now, wasn't Westworld, which was very Illuminati confirmed, wasn't that also in the park was called Delos, was it not? Delos, Westworld. What could it all mean? Oh, Delos is the character. He's the guy who started the founder. Yeah, okay. Yeah, the company's called Delos, founded by James Delos. Yeah, it's an incorporation. The subsidy that creates and runs the various parks, like Westworld. So that's done on purpose, right? Island of the Dead, which would explain a lot for Westworld, right? It's basically a Western realm of robots. Bunch of dead people. So Jackie Onassis and her sister, Princess Lee Radzivill, because she married into the royal bloodline of the Radzivills, traveled to India. They went to Taj Mahal, which Downard asserts is as a shrine of magic and mysticism, fertility, and death. And it represents beliefs of the Bhagavad Gita. Now, the Bhagavad Gita is fascinating because that connects us into Eyes Wide Shut and Twin Peaks, because the book Bhagavad Gita is in Twin Peaks because Ben Horn is reading it, and an Eyes Wide Shut, apparently there was a verse from the Bhagavad Gita that was read during the orgy sex scene, but India was tripping hard on this, and then Warner Brothers removed it because Kubrick was gone. Because I think Kubrick would have told him, F off. It's my movie. Don't watch it if you don't like it. And this verse, allegedly, was, for the protection of the virtuous, for the destruction of evil, and for the firm establishment of Dharma, I take birth and am incarnated on earth from age to age. So there's your life and death. Exactly what Downer's talking about. And the meaning of that verse, from what I read online, is that Krishna will protect those who uphold Dharma, you know, the will, and restore balance to maintain cosmic order. And the incarnation talk is all about the cyclical nature of the divine interventions from Krishna, because he is reborn constantly in order to maintain the cosmic order. And if you heard my Eyes Wide Shut series, you know there's this whole focus on sex and death and the regenerative forces. They're balancing these opposing forces. And this whole thing just kind of fits nicely into the theories of those two pop culture, you know, titans, Kubrick and Lynch. Now we move to set five, the mystical toponymy section. And he says, mystical toponymy pertains to the magic and mysteries of words and the Masonic science of symbolism. And he says, no one has thus far documented any political or modern Kabbalist or sorceress uses of mystical toponymy. He's talking that trash, old Downard. He's like, I belong on that Mount Crushmore. Ain't nobody talking about this. Y'all just a bunch of copying ass hoes. Get me up there. I'm the king. And I respect that. I like that's some nefarious trash talking. I love it. That's great. The inner wrestling heel in me, stand up slow clap for that one. I gotta talk to Michael Hoffman. I gotta know what Downard was like. Put that on my list of things to do. Okay. He uses an example of mystical toponymy as this 32nd degree line of latitude. Again, this is something that's in common parlance in today's modern conspiracy theory world of content creators. My man was doing it before anyone, as far as I know. I mean, maybe someone can correct me if I'm wrong. I feel like he's the original. Because I'm going to explain to you why I think this book was written in 78. Either in today's episode or part three. I don't remember. But 78, that's a long time ago. So he says this 32nd degree line of latitude corresponds to the 32nd degree of Scottish Rite of Freemasonry, which, as you know, is the uppermost that you can get to through initiation. 33 is the highest level. But you have to be invited into that. You can't just work your way through it, right? Memorizing these rituals and going through all these tests. You got to be invited in. But the 32nd degree line of latitude traces through New Mexico to the Tres Hermanas, a.k.a. the Three Sisters Mountains. And then through a ghost town called Shakespeare. All right? You see how these things are starting to connect now? And Shakespeare and the Three Sisters is from the Shakespeare story Macbeth. And if you continue that 32nd degree line west, it goes into Ruby, like Jack Ruby, who we're going to talk about, and into Twin Mountain Peaks, called Kennedy and Johnson. What? My man's dropping Hammer of the Gods on that ass. Yeah, that's quite a finding there, Downard. Now, all the Freemasonic lodges are modeled after Solomon's Temple. We already know that. He mentions it again. And then we get the first mention of how the Great Whore connects into mythology and copper. He says, Arizona is the copper state. Copper, Kypros, is symbolically as well as etymologically associated with Cyprus, Kypros, and Cyprian. The word Cyprian indicates a wanton woman, and this meaning is traced through the word Kypris to Aphrodite Porn, Venus, Al-Uza, the great whore of mythology, and those women who fulfill this role in Magica Sexualis from time to time are called the Copper Queens. Where is he finding this stuff? That's what he claims, though. And if you recall, a lot of the theories of Twin Peaks, Laura Palmer could be the magical sexualis, the great whore, being used in various rituals. Also, Vin Armani from the Showtime show Gigolos is now a conspiracy theorist, and he goes by the name Cyprian on X. Cyprian, like he's the wanton woman, which I found curious. Now, when JFK died, Canada actually named an entire mountain after him. Senator Robert Kennedy went to climb the mountain, and he camped right next to the Three Sisters Mountain Range. That's right. Canada also has a Three Sisters Mountain, the Tres Hermanas. RFK also stayed at a base camp at Cathedral Glacier at Whitehorse, and Downer talks about how the white horse is a funerary symbol used in Oriental burials, a white stone horse that guards the imperial tomb at Nanking. Now, I connect this again into Twin Peaks because I think Frost and Lynch have read Downer's work, because Twin Peaks is obviously full of white horses from when, well, I'm not going to plot spoil anything. From a particular scene with Maddie and Laura and Carrie, and it goes on and on, right? It's a recurring theme. It's in all of Twin Peaks. The white horse is very important to that universe. All right, set six, the Lone Pentagram State. Now, here's where we talk about some of the symbolism of colors, like the color red. He says, red is the appropriate color of the Royal Arch Degree and symbolizes fire, the symbol of soul regeneration. Now, does that make any more sense when we look at Twin Peaks with the Red Room and Bob and the fire, right? Remember in the end of season two when Bob's in there and it's all about taking souls and snatching souls and moving them around and things? It's the Red Room. And you have the fire walk with me. Let me go back to the adoption of the color refers historically to the regeneration or rebuilding of the Temple of Solomon. And this is the exact meaning of the buttressing of the Royal Arch Degree. For them, the regeneration of the temple and of life itself are synonymous. So is the Red Room in Twin Peaks a sort of Temple of Solomon? In a way, you could argue that. Remember that altar table? That's a very strange-looking, very Solomonic-looking piece of furniture. And he's saying that it's a bit of a hermetic axiom. As above, so below. You have the rebuilding of Solomon's temple, which is a lot of modern-day news situations going on, and the regeneration of life, the death and rebirth rituals, are synonymous to these cryptocracy folks. Then he talks about the symbolism of the hourglass. He says, the hourglass is to be found in the third degree of masonry and is a funerary symbol to the extent that it was once a custom to bury these primitive timepieces with the dead as a sign that time has run out. And all that is going to matter here in a second. He said that the city of Houston, Texas is very important to the Freemasons, and that the coat of arms on the flag is the same as it is for Sir Hugh Padavon. And this goes back to a Norman knight named Sir Hugh of Padavon, and his coat of arms is found on the Houston flag. And if you look up Hugh de Padignan, you'll see it links into the Houston clan, which has a coat of arms of an hourglass with two female red deers and three marlets. Those are mythical birds. So it connects into his idea of the color red and the hourglass is what he's saying. And that's encoded into the symbolism of the flag for Houston. And the city of Houston and this is where I would get confused in his work, because when I look up the city of Houston's flag, it has the seal of Houston on it, which is the a mixture of the pentagram, the lone star, with a plow and a train. So I don't know what he's talking about. Maybe it used to be a flag, or it's a... I'm not sure. Either way, Hugh of Padavon was given these lands, and he put his name on the village of Houston, which means Hugh's Town. Houston. Hugh's Town. Get it? And this ties into Macbeth. It gets even more complicated. You can find the book and read it. Again, we're in set 6, the Lone Pentagram State. Because at some point, King Malcolm hooks up with Hugh and gives him all this land. And if you look at the Wikipedia, it says that Sir Hugh de Padignan, who's the same guy, was a Knights Templar. And they believe he died in the Battle of Hayton. The Battle of Hayton with a bunch of other Knights Templars. Then we talk about the Rice Hotel at the Capitol of Texas building. That was a very important meeting location for the Freemasons. And in fact, the slang word for the Rice Hotel is Temple Houston, because it's a Freemason temple. And they wanted Houston originally to be the capital of Texas, but it was then moved to Austin because Houston was a little too wild, a little too anarchistic. He says, it is important to note that for a time, the city of Houston was a symbol of wanton authority, in that temporarily it was a recordless government maintained solely by a Masonic force of arms. And it was actually the location for Holland Lodge Number 1, the first Masonic lodge in Texas, which Sam Houston was a member of. He was a Freemason. Anson Jones, fun fact, Anson Jones was the last president of the Republic of Texas and the first Grand Master of the Texas Freemasons, and he committed suicide at the Rice Hotel in 1858, which is wild. He died at the Freemasonic Lodge there as a Freemason. Which makes you wonder if that's not a ritual, right? And maybe that's what Downer doesn't mention that. I found that through my research, but maybe he's pointing to these kinds of ideas. Now, there's this longer section. I'm going to read this to you. I'm going to read this to you. Then we're going to talk about the killing of the king a little bit. We'll start teasing that to prep us for part 3. Long section, he's going to basically say that Texas is an example of the Freemasonic control system, the secret government. Texas and the symbolic... I'm just kidding. I'm not going to do the whole thing in that voice. Texas and the symbolical pattern they followed in obtaining control is concealed from the children with pretense. Texas is a state of pretense. It's not simply a coincidence that Texas is a byword for brutality. And pretense means like a hoax, right? So let me go over there. Texas is a state of a hoax. it is not simply a coincidence that Texas is a byword for brutality, political corruption, and unheard of violence. And at one time in American history, masses of people connected these atrocities and scandals with Freemasonry. Needless to say, this is not the case at present, but the authentic nature of the Kennedy assassination is incontrovertible evidence of Masonic hoodwinking. Because of the amazement and awe which often sweeps a free people in the wake of a revelation that there has existed in their midst, and even in those leaders in whom they place their trust, a highly secret society with goals and interests entirely in opposition to their own. A propaganda campaign lasting to this day was instituted by Masonry. He just said it all out loud right there. Was he the first guy to sort of put this together like that? I think so. He's talking about the deep state run by this Illuminati type. The broad mantle of Masonry, the mystical darkness of the hoodwink, was lowered over Texas like a bank of oppressive clouds. Imagined virtues of Masons in the Masonic government were extolled, and the tall stories called Texas history were enshrined in the classrooms. The true character of Masons in the Republic of Texas and the symbolical pattern they followed in obtaining control is concealed from the children with pretense as a hoax. Texas is a state of pretense, a state of hoax. It is, this is what I'm talking about. Now I copied and pasted that. Okay. It's like he says the same thing twice in a row, unless that's the printing of this. All right, let me keep reading. It's not simply a coincidence that Texas is a byword for brutality, political corruption, and unheard of violence, and at one time in American history, masses of people connected these atrocities and scandals with Masonry. Needless to say, this is not the case at present, but the authentic nature of the Kennedy assassination is incontrovertible evidence of Masonic hoodwinking. All right. So, he's saying that Texas is just one example of many that the Masonic cryptocracy has control, and they do, you know, rituals and stuff. Also, Twin Peaks, Carrie Page from Odessa, Texas. Interesting. Now, Texas is also called the Lone Star State, which he points out correctly as a pentagram. Albert Pike described the pentagram as the absolute sign of human intelligence and the actual blazing star so often referred to by the Jewish Kabbalists. Now, you already know that the blazing star of Freemasonry is Sirius, and Sirius is important in all of these occult, you know, rituals and belief systems for reasons that I talk at in depth in The Dark Path. It's believed to be the source of the Thelemic Current. It's believed to be where these, I don't know, entities come from that they worship so hard. And Downard was also hip to this. Some Kabbalah and Masonic dogma are identical, like the Mother Lodge of the Masonic Rite of France that was called the Kabbalistic Companion. He says that Kabbalah and alchemy are very important to the Masonic sorcery, and pentagrams are considered holy and mysterious. And if you have it upright, pointed upward, it's the good or positive principle, the Yetzer HaTov. And if you have it inverted or upside down, like the Satanists do, it's the sinister principle, the Yetzer HaRa. And he suggests it's the symbolism of opposing dualities of light and dark, which makes all the sense in the world that that's important. And if you put the two stars, one up and one down, what do you get? You get the Star of David, right? Then he goes back to the Rice Hotel again and says that there were these young parties that were used as part of fertility rituals, and they would give presents of oranges. Simpler times. Remember that? I remember for Christmas, you'd get oranges. Remember that? Simpler times. now people are buying cars and all kinds of stuff. Okay. Then we start talking about the killing of the king. Finally. My goodness. And this is probably the most important concept he provides. This is probably his legacy in one section of text. He's saying that America is full of pagan psychodrama rituals in the domain of the psychosexual, and that the JFK assassination was actually not what the theorists claim it was. Instead, it was a sorcery ritual used to change humanity. It was an alchemical process. I'm going to read you from his book. But the ultimate purpose of that assassination was not political or economic, but sorcerous, for the control of the dreaming mind and the marshaling of its forces is the omnipotent force in the entire scenario of lies, cruelty, and degradation. Something died in the American people on November 22, 1963. Call it idealism, innocence, or the quest for moral excellence. It is this transformation of human beings which is the authentic reason and motive for the Kennedy murder, and until so-called conspiracy theorists can accept this very real element, they will be reduced to so many eccentrics amusing a tiny remnant of dilettantes? What do you say, bro? And hobbyists. He talks about control of the dreaming mind, and that's exactly what I think. I think he's on the nose with it. Same goes for the pandemic. It was like a giant ritual to control the mind. It's about the transformation induced through alchemical processes. The transformation of human beings was the motive of the murder. And I love his, he's talking trash. So-called conspiracy theorist, you ho-ass hoes. Love it. This guy was a G. Now recall Twin Peaks. Cooper's like, the real question is, who killed JFK? Pointing us right to Downard. And control of the dreaming mind fits very nicely into the entire world of Twin Peaks and the dream. The dreamer who dreams. And transformation is a part of the process to usher in the changes of towards the golden age or the great reset. This is how they do it. Pivotal times of change. And what happened after 63? You had the whole hippie movement and man going to the moon and this weird embrace of technology. Sometimes they use this to stoke division. Get us fighting over politics, inserting these things into our daily lives. Nobody on November 22nd, 1963 did not talk about JFK. Not one person. Everyone talked about JFK that day. And to me, this is the most powerful idea Downard was trying to present. And it connects synchromysticism into the political mainstream media psychodramas. Then he starts going through some of these things. He talks about JFK and his wife had flown into Gate 28 in Dallas that morning at Love Field. And he says that 28 is one of the correspondences of Solomon in Kabbalah numerology. And the Solomonic name for 28 is, guess, it's Beale. That's right. We're back to the Beales again. See, he had to lay a bunch of seeds, and now he's kind of going back through and proving them. And that 28th degree of latitude in Texas was where the Cape Canaveral moon flight was launched, which was only made possible by JFK's moon quest. And what was the purpose of that? To put Freemasons onto the moon to claim it as part of the Supreme Masonic territory or whatever they were doing. And, of course, that happened after the killing of the king ritual. And also that 28th degree, oddly enough, it goes through the Alamo and New Orleans, which is where the Jim Garrison stuff went down and the Discordia, Principia Discordia book was printed. Remember that? By Grace Zabriskie, a.k.a. Sarah Palmer. Because she plugs into the whole thing because she was dating Carrie Thornley. I mean, I think all these things are connected. I really do. Okay, back to this Love Field thing. He says that the motorcade went from Love Field to Dealey Plaza, which was, the site of the first Masonic temple in Dallas, which has been apparently raised since then. That's always a confusing word, raised. R-A-Z-E-D, which means to tear down. I don't know, raise and tear down. It seems like antonyms of some kind, but they took it down, but there's a marker at the plaza, apparently. Skinny Fresh, go check it out. Send me a photo. Is there a point there? And then the motorcade goes down to Elm Street, where there was a Blue Front Tavern that was a Masonic hangout, which is a real place. And if you talk about the Blue Lodge, you're talking about the first 3 degrees of Freemasonry. Some of these things I'm just adding into his stuff that I'm like, bro, like, you were really ahead of your time with this. And again, I've got some weird confusion on my PDF as to if this is the next page or not. My apologies. I think it is, though, from my rearrangement of this weird PDF. It talks about how President Kennedy was the recipient of a birthday party in his honor at Madison Square Garden, and Peter Lawford invited Marilyn Monroe, and the rest was history, right? With the whole happy birthday to you, all sultry, in front of his wife. Oh, oy vey. Then he, and again, I think my rearrangement of the pages could be off here because it seems like we're jumping. This is the last point, and then we're done for today. And then part three, we're going to go even deeper and wrap it all up and zoom it all the way out, okay? Then he talks about the Freemasons and the three assassins of the Hiram Abiff story, remember? The three assassins were called the Unworthy Craftsmen, because in Freemasonry, they're obsessed with Earth being a game board of tessellating black and white squares. Now, the Unworthy Craftsmen, they approached Hiram Abiff and they wanted the secret word. They wanted the secrets, the gnosis, the wisdom, and he wouldn't give it to him, so he had to die for it. And remember, we had guest Ryan Springer on here, and he told us that the rituals of the endowment ceremony of Mormonism reflects the initiation of Hiram Abiff. Well, when it comes to JFK, there was the three hobos, the three tramps that were arrested at the rail yard behind Dealey Plaza after the assassination. And Downard claims that there's no other vocation with a higher percentage of Freemasons than the railroad workers. Which, maybe that's true, but maybe that's why when Freemasons greet each other, they ask if they're traveling men. It's like a coded language for Freemasons. In fact, I met a dude who was a Mason years before I thought about doing any of this stuff, before I'd read Behold a Pale Horse. And he asserted that there was a secret handshake that they had, and he was like, I can tell if you're a Mason or not. And we shook hands, and he's like, nope. Anyway, he was telling me that there was this whole thing, right? And that's another one they'd use. They use this sort of traveling men language. And Downard says that no records of their identities has ever been revealed. I don't know if that's true, though, because Woody Harrelson's father is alleged to be one of the three tramps. He was apparently a hitman, but he sort of went back and forth on whether or not he had anything to do with JFK. We love Woody Harrelson, though. We're not going to look too deep into that, you know? We love Woody. In Dealey Plaza, he decodes the word Dealey, which means Dea. It means goddess in Latin. So again, with the three goddess things, what are we doing? And you combine Dea and Lei to spell Dealey. You've got Dea, which means goddess. Lei, which means a line of geography, like the ley lines. Dealey. Dealey Plaza. And it apparently used to be underwater because it had been flooded by the Trinity River until they built this flood control system. Thus, you have a goddess rule plaza on the same ley line as the Trinity site. All this stuff devoted to goddesses and things. And JFK was then publicly assassinated in one of the biggest moments in American history, for sure. And he starts to connect this into the real interesting bits which come in part three, the detonation of the alchemical creation and the destruction of primordial matter. Because the first atomic bomb dropped at the Trinity site on that degree of latitude, on the 33rd, right? Ascending from 32 to 33. And JFK, he will make sense of this later. JFK is the scapegoat in the Killing of the King ritual, the Cyanideic, which is a Gaelic word that means Kennedy, and it also means wounded head. And it's true. The Scottish Gaelic word for ugly head and the Gaelic form of the name Kennedy have the same spelling, this Cyanideic. So there's still more to unpack. In fact, the next one is going to be even longer because I got to go unpack way more, and then we're going to zoom all the way out and try to like make some sense out of this and figure out what Downard was trying to tell us. So in part three, we're going to wrap it all up. We'll talk about the rest of the chapters, Oswald's divine language, funerary rites with symbolism of green dragons, JFK's coffin, more coded Freemasonry symbolism at the White House, a ginkgo tree with ties to Jack Ruby and the circus, which is the Church of Satan. We talk about the scapegoat and the alchemical process and the killing of the king. And then we talk about Camelot with King Arthur, comparing it to JFK, the mass ritual orchestrated events. And then we look at the Warren Commission, which had Masonic involvement, the Knights Templar, the inversion of words, and the final goal, the final point of all of this nonsense, making manifest all that is hidden. And that's what we're going to do. So join me next time for part three of your bonus supporters supported content. Thank you so much for being a supporter. I love you guys so much. Love you. you guys support the show and you keep it alive. I say that, I mean that. I appreciate you so much that I'm going to do this. I'm doing these three bonus shows on the deep dive into one of the most important conspiracy classics ever. And then later, we're going to work on 1984, another conspiracy classics dive. So thank you for supporting the show. Thank you for listening. Till next time, stay positive.